Lecture 32. What is Black English?
Before we proceed to the final four lectures, I thought that we might take a break and take a look at the non-standard English dialect that's probably the most immediate to Americans, especially these days. When we go through a course like this, it's all well and good to have some insights about Beowulf and to know what Semitic is and to know about Creoles. But it's also important to have new ways of looking at linguistic phenomena that are around you every day. So one example of that was the blackboard grammar digression that we did in one of the lectures. And in this case, I think that hitting the Ebonics topic is equally important because, not to sound remotely high and mighty or to imply that linguists are some sort of rarefied caste, but only if you understand the things that you now understand based on these previous lectures could you really parse the Ebonics controversy of 1996-97 and really understand what Black English is. It's a very particular and very peculiar subject, and we now have the tools to understand it. In any case, I'm going to call it Black English. There is a tendency among academics nowadays to call it African American Vernacular English. That gets shortened to AV. I find that just a rather aesthetically unpleasant acronym, and I grew up calling it Black English, and that's what I'm going to call it. Some people also have called it Black English Vernacular. And then I think that for better or for worse, the term Ebonics, which has always sounded to me like a medical procedure that women on Park Avenue underwent in the 40s, is stuck with us. But I'm not going to call it Ebonics. It's going to be called Black English. In any case, it's often thought that Black English refers to slang only. And of course, this is what kind of sticks out. And so, for example, there's the colorful language that we know from rap music. When I used to talk about this, I used to use Funky Fresh as an example of the slang. I think that shows how long I've been talking about this. I don't think anybody's saying that anymore. But I think one slang expression that I have picked up over the past couple of years is fashizzle. Fashizzle apparently is a cute way of saying for sure. That is a bit of slang. And, of course, that will be gone soon and will very nicely make this set obsolete. Or off the hook. Someone might say that lemonade was off the hook. That doesn't mean that the lemonade was ever appended to a hook. It means that it was off the hook like a telephone. Anyway, off the hook means really good. So slang like that. But Black English is more than that. And, in fact, the slang is the least interesting part of it in terms of seeing things that are systematic, that are correspondent to other linguistic phenomena in the world. The slang is decoration. It's pretty, it's funny, it's interesting, it's vulgar, it's annoying, whatever it is. That comes, it goes, it's just the icing. But Black English is also a sound system. And this is something that people often are kind of confused about. Black English is a non-standard, but not substandard, dialect. And as a result, it has a different sound system than the standard dialect. And that is why we perceive there as being something like a black sound. And spelling, orthography, have a way of distorting what the issue of the sound system is. So, for example, in Black English, one might say with instead of with. Now, we very understandably think, well, it leaves off a letter because there's with, and then there's with, which has four letters. But if you think about it, language is not about letters, and we know that the English spelling system is a monstrosity. Think about them just as sounds. Pretend you're the preliterate villager. With, with. Now, if you think about it, on both of those words, there's one sound at the end. F, f. Now, we see th on the page, but you don't say th. There's no to anything in th. I'm doing one thing. Th. I'm sticking my tongue between my teeth. So, th, th. So that means that whereas standard English happens to have th, Black English has f. It doesn't really leave anything off. It just makes something different. So the spelling kind of confuses us. In standard French, there's the word charbon, and that's coal. In Norman French, it's carbon. Now, one might think that Norman French leaves off a sound because it has just C instead of CH. But again, sh, k, sh, k. They're both one thing. So spelling can be very misleading. Then, in other cases, it's not just a change, but there are times when Black English's sound system is more complex than English's. And so, for example, Bill in Standard English, but then in Black English it comes out more like Bill, Bill. Well, that's a diphthong. So that's something that verges on being two sounds, so that's more. Now, of course, there are cases where Black English's system is simpler, and so if you have West in Standard English, that will often be Wes in Black English. But really, these things kind of balance each other out. If a Martian came down and listened to the young Negro speaking, and then listened to Bill O'Reilly speaking, then the Martian would just think, the Negro speaks differently than Bill O'Reilly. Simple as that. So, different sounds. Then there is grammar. Now, in some places, Black English grammar is simpler than standard. I wonder what feature I'm going to choose. How about the verb to be? And so, for example, in Black English, you might say, she my sister. And obviously, something has been left out, like in Russian. So, in Russian, она моя сестра. She's my sister, and there is no to be in a sentence like that. Chekhov was not unsophisticated, and Boris Yeltsin is unsophisticated, but Chekhov was not unsophisticated, and therefore neither is Black English in this. It's just one of many language varieties that leaves it out. Cantonese does as well, but that is simpler. Elsewhere, Black English kind of comes out ahead, and the be verb is useful here as well. So, for example, if you hear somebody say, she be walking to the store, that does not mean that somebody in a dress is walking in front of you to the store right then. That is actually erroneous Black English. What she be walking to the store means is that she does it on a regular basis. The be is a habitual marker of all things. Now, it's not that people are conscious of this. Very few African Americans, I would say no African American who hasn't had a little bit of linguistics would be able to tell you that that's how be is used. Just like most of us don't know what the difference between and the is in usage, although we use it properly all day long every day. But if you look at how be is used, it's like that. If the person is walking in front of you, then it's she walk into the store right now. You would never point out the window and say, look, she be walking to the store. That would be wrong. That would be using the grammar in the wrong way. Now, in English, when we have the habitual, we indicate it by not doing anything. And so we would say, she walks to the store every Tuesday. And even if I didn't say every Tuesday, if I say she walks to the store, that does not mean that she's doing it now. Imagine I point out a window and I say, look, she walks to the store. It's like I got hit in the head. It's, look, she's walking to the store. Only the foreigner would point out the window and say, oh, look, she walks to the store. And we think that that's picturesque in the foreigner, but it's also wrong. So we just have the bare verb for the habitual. And then in Black English, you have this marker, be. So Black English is more explicit about that than Standard English. So that's not just hocus pocus or mumbo jumbo or political theatrics. That's really the linguistic facts about Black English and how it works. So, it is another dialect of English rather than some sort of bastardization of the language. And so, just like there's Norman French, there's the French of Picardy, there are the Frenches of many places. There is the English of Brooklyn, there's the English of Cornwall, there is the English of Black, and it's just one of those. Any associations we have otherwise are based on the fact that languages and dialects are spoken in societies, and obviously there are racial tensions and racial issues that will color, so to speak, our views. But in terms of these two dialects, Standard and Black English on paper, the difference between them, or the qualitative relationship between them, is much different than we're often led to think by visceral impressions, by misimpressions, by a media that doesn't have enough time to do justice to the facts, etc. So, however, back in 96 and 97, we were told by particularly members of the Oakland school board that Black English is an African language with English words. And I think most of us heard that and thought, yeah, it didn't seem like it. I thought it was English. And we were told by many people, some of them PhDs who should have known better, that we could not trust our ears on this, that there was something mystical going on that you could only understand if you were a linguist. Well, after this course, you can come to your own conclusions about that. And the conclusions are these. If Black English were an African language, well, we've seen what happens when a European language becomes an African language in terms of its grammar. This was Creoles. And so we remember Sranang of Suriname, where the hunter bought a house for his friend, is Ahondi Mandati Ben Baiwan Oso Giemati. Now, that doesn't sound anything like any statement we've ever heard from the mouth of a Black person born in the United States. That's not what Black English sounds like. We would not have, even to give it a fairer shake, Black English with something like, the hunter that Ben buy one house, give his friend. That would be modeled on African structure. But that's not the way Black people in the United States talk. And so obviously the African analysis doesn't quite work. Now the people who were saying this did not just pull that idea completely out of the air. They noticed that, for example, you can leave the third person singular S ending off in Black English. And so you have I walk, you walk, the way he walk, then we walk, y'all walk, they walk. So that's possible. And then all of a sudden you have this endingless language, at least in the verbs. And of course that might remind you of African languages, many of which slaves spoke, many of which are languages that do not have suffixes in the way that an Indo-European language has them. So if it's true that in Yoruba you would say, I walk, you walk, he, she, it walk, we walk, you all walk, they walk, and then in Black English it seems to be the same pattern, it's reasonable to think, well, then there must be something African going on. It's also reasonable to then do further and more detailed analysis. That was not always the case with those who were propounding that Black English was an African language. And then there are other things that you think about, such as that while you can say the way he walk, you can also say in other grammatical contexts, and this is very complex in Black English in itself, but you can also say I walks to the store. You know, don't be making fun of the way I walks. So there you go. It just seems that the S moved. It's not necessarily that it doesn't exist in the language. But in general, Black English is a dialect where there are no verbs run together, like in Sranang. No such thing as the hunter that and things like that. Basically, Black English is as we hear English. The counterintuitive is always compelling in a science. It's always great to find out that your ears are not working the way they should, that something's going on that you would never expect. But in the case of whether or not African Americans are speaking English, I think I would be inclined to say that African Americans are speaking English. And one indication that you have of that is that this is a dialect that retains a great deal of the irregular, bric-a-brac, frustrating, why does it have to be that way mess that standard English has. So, for example, there are plurals like man, men, foot, feet. Why? We've kind of seen why. That doesn't make these things any less frustrating for the foreigner. Well, Black English does not have mans. Black English doesn't have foots. If you're a Creole language where you've really gone African and English has only been learned partially, and remember that Creoles are as much about reduction of structure as they are about mixture, then you don't have men and feet. That's the hard stuff. That's the first thing you're going to get rid of. But in Black English, there is men and there is feet. In Black English, you do not have anyone saying, I goed to the store yesterday. You know, you have I went. No African American has trouble with the fact that there is this irregularity. Nobody standed in Black English. You stood. Nobody thinked. You thought. These are irregularities. We don't think about them, but anybody else who learns English has to. And Black English is full of those things. And so it's obvious that however the language was created, however the dialect was created, it was created within a context where English got through pretty fully. It wasn't that there was this grand transformative process. So it's not an African language, Black English. It is a non-standard dialect of English, but Africa had, as we will see, a very distant relationship to the dialect, despite the color of the skin of its speakers. Now, there is also a kind of controversy about the history of Black English. Many have argued that Black English began as a Creole, if we want to talk about the history of the language. And it's hard to chart the history of Black English because Black English is a non-standard dialect. We're all aware that in many ways it's a very stigmatized dialect. And as a result, while the dialect was forming, people were not inclined to write down, the Negroes are developing an interesting new way of talking. They weren't even inclined to write down, the Negroes are developing a disgusting new way of talking, and here is its grammar. There was no such thing. No one really cared how the Negroes were talking. People were doing things like writing the Declaration of Independence and things like that. So you have the occasional quick passage of how a Black person was speaking, often caricatured, so you're not sure if you can trust it. And really, that's about all you've got once you go back before, really, about 1960, because only since the second half of the 20th century, when academia made what was at first a healthy tilt to the left and became more interested in charting the diversity among different people, including those down below, that Black English became an object of study. So now there is a thriving industry of academic Black English study. That was not true before, and only occasionally was it written about, and generally not with the kind of standards of accuracy that a linguist would desire today. So it's an open field as to figuring out what the history was, and many people have said that Black English used to be a Creole, specifically Gullah, sometimes known as Geechee talk. The idea is that where Black English is spoken today in the South, it used to be that the ancestors of those Black people who are speaking Black English today would have been speaking Gullah, that Gullah would have been much more widespread. Today, Gullah is just spoken on the Sea Islands off of South Carolina and a little bit inland. But the idea is that that is a relic situation of a much more widespread language before. So that would be an interesting history. And it's kind of a variation on the Africa. This time, instead of it being Africa, it's that Black English is a watered-down version of something that was once exotically different from standard English, like Gullah. So it's one of those ideas that you want to believe. I remember when I was first exposed to it, I thought, isn't it nice to imagine that I had ancestors who spoke, you know, not only African languages, but more immediately here in the United States, I thought they spoke Geechee, something very different, and my heritage and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, if you look into the historical sources, it doesn't wash. You look for evidence that Gullah was once spoken further, and the evidence just isn't there. Now, of course, you don't find evidence in the form of someone in North Carolina saying in 1860, we do not speak Gullah here any more than we will in 2004. A lot of it is a matter of the fact that the Gullah evidence never comes up. No one mentions it. It never shows up in any depiction of speech of Black people. And so you start to wonder. And there have been some really clever ways of trying to get at this. So, for example, there was a time when it was fashionable to suppose that one was supposed to first free slaves and then send them back to the land where they belonged, or just somewhere other than the United States. So in the 1800s, there were large numbers of Black people who were resettled in places such as Nova Scotia, big surprise, most of them didn't like it, and the Dominican Republic, that worked out better, and Liberia, that we all know did not work out very well at all. All of those places are ones where Black people at the time when supposedly all or most or even a good deal of Black people were speaking Gullah instead of Black English would have been moved somewhere else, where presumably if we went to those places, we'd find them still speaking something like this Gullah. The idea is that everybody else in the United States, after emancipation, had more contact with whites and more education, and so the dialect diluted into Black English, which is closer to the standard. But we would think that if that sort of thing didn't happen in Liberia, or if it didn't happen in the Dominican Republic in particular, then we would see a preservation. And the Dominican Republic is particularly interesting because, of course, the language there is Spanish. So the idea would be that there'd be no standard English to move to. And there's a tiny peninsula, a peninsula that's literally about as thin as a pencil, except that thousands of people live on it, where there are rather isolated, poor black people who speak a kind of English, and they're surrounded by Spanish, and so the English can't bleed into standard English. And there have been studies done of them, waiting to hear them speak Gullah, but they really just sound kind of like American black people. Or there's a Liberian dialect that's kind of like that. The Nova Scotia dialect is like that. So it doesn't seem to really work. Or there are other things. You just look in places where you would expect it. Scott Joplin, the ragtime composer, lived from 1868 to 1917. And he, near the end of his life, wrote an opera. It was called Treemonisha. Scott Joplin was black, by the way. And he wrote this opera. And he wrote it about life in his small Texas black town when he was a young child. So we're talking about post-emancipation black America way down south in the 1860s and 1870s. And he's writing about poor, notably unsophisticated people. Whole opera. Isn't it interesting that Scott Joplin never has any of those people speaking any kind of Gullah or Geechee? That's where you would expect it to be. They speak a kind of stylized black English. And it's not that you wouldn't put the Gullah in an opera because people wouldn't understand it, because then you have the play that Porgy and Bess was based on, written by Dorothy and DeBose Hayward, and the play is frankly a difficult read today because it's written in this kind of Geechee-ized English. And so the idea was to show that these people were kind of speaking a different language, even though you could understand them. So where is that in Treemonisha? And there are all sorts of things like that where no one ever mentions what would have been a prominent phenomenon. If you study the history of any real Creole-speaking country, you don't have to look for evidence that the slaves spoke something else. If you're studying Haiti, you know there was Haitian Creole. It's not hidden. You don't have to look for clues. It's there. Always people are saying the slaves have a certain way of talking. You are going to need this dictionary before you go to the plantation, etc. Here in the United States, that doesn't exist. There's no dictionary of slave talk. There is no grammatical sketch of the speech of the Negroes for those who are interested. Nothing like that, some yellowing book that you find at the archives. So the conclusion, I think, and some people would disagree with me, but that's too bad. In my opinion, I don't think that there is any evidence that Gullah was once spoken much beyond where it is now. And so again, black English is not as exotic in that way as people think. Where do the differences come from then? There is something exotic, but ironically, most of it is from Great Britain. And it's very counterintuitive. We do not associate the African-American experience here in the United States, especially after the 1960s, with people in northern Great Britain who are on TV shows like The Darling Buds of May and Are You Being Served? But really, those are the parallels. So, for example, Habitual B. It's interesting. Ralph Cramden doesn't say that. So it's not something that happens in all non-standard dialects of English. But what that is, actually, is Hiberno English. It's Irish English. I can read you a sentence, even when I be round there with friends, I be scared. That's not the south side of Chicago. That is an Irishman, believe it or not. Very often, Irish English speakers listen to talks in academia about black English and say, you know, this is just like what I heard at home. And not the slang. Remember, the slang, we're going to put all that in a box, and we're going to take that box, and we're going to put it here. That's not of concern. We're going to push that off the table. It's the sounds and the grammar that we're interested in. So, no, there's no fishizzle in Ireland, but it's about the sounds and the grammar. Or if somebody says, oh, it's somebody at the door, for there's somebody at the door. It's somebody at the door over there. In Cornwall English, we'll have my made-up Cornwall accent again. You could say, test someone to the door. That's how you would say, there's someone at the door. It's somebody at the door. They have the tis. So that it usage is something that you can find in England. And in general, and there's no exaggeration, if you look at a dialect atlas of the non-standard dialects of English in Great Britain, you see black English winking at you page after page after page. It's obvious that not just some and not just half, but most of the differences between black English and standard English are, of all things, things that arose on that windswept island with bad food. Specifically, it was people speaking those dialects who were brought to the New World and worked alongside these black slaves. Often the indentured servants were essentially slaves themselves. There was a great deal of what we might call miscegenation, and that of course meant more mingling of the kinds of dialects. And there were many of the plantation owners themselves were not exactly from the cream of society, because once more there was no air conditioning, and that's almost not a joke. Why in the world would you go work your butt off in Alabama rather than stay home where you are? It's hot in Alabama, and there's no fan. So, if you went there, you probably were not a coddled standard English speaker. So, there are all sorts of things like that. So, what is Black English then? You know, what exactly is it? It's not quite that Black English is a grand combination of British dialects. I say this, and the British impact is quite extensive. It's dominant even. But still, Black Americans don't sound like Miss Brahms and Mrs. Slocum on Are You Being Served? If by any chance any of you have not seen that show and don't know what I'm talking about, I warmly recommend, in addition to all of the sources on language that I have in the glossary for this set, that you watch every episode of this silly and delightful, heartwarming show. Of course, only to listen to the non-standard British accents. In any case, it's not only that, because clearly there's a difference. For example, there is no non-standard British dialect that has "she, my sister." Or to the extent that there is one analyst has found it kind of mumbled among a few speakers in this one town in a certain mood when the planets were aligned in a certain way. Okay, and that's a slight exaggeration, but only in that one town with this one dialect, and it's clearly very rare. It is not part of how English usually works in Britain. And then on the other hand, there are other things like why you didn't call me. You know, if you're inclined, listen to African American kids on the street, or if you know some better, just listen. And so, why you didn't call me? Well, instead of the why didn't you call me, not making that inversion, that's not British English either. There's some differences. What that is that we see that these are slight simplifications, just slight, not enough to make you think, goodness, a Creole in Harlem, but just slight little shavings around the edges. And the reason for that is that this was a dialect created by Africans who had already learned other languages natively. So apparently they learned English pretty darn well. But every now and then they shaved off a corner. Why didn't you go to the store? Why you didn't go to the store makes just as much sense to my ear, maybe partly because of having grown up hearing the dialect. It actually kind of sounds better. Why didn't you go to the store? Why do you have to switch it like that? It's perverted, really. And that kind of twisting of subject and auxiliary is actually very rare outside of Europe. So why you didn't go to the store? Well, why not say that? That's nice. Leaving out the verb to be is something that's very common when you are learning a language and trying to kind of shave off some of the corners. You don't have to have it, and so therefore maybe you might leave that out, especially since in English contraction is sort of a bridge to that. So she's my sister, the is already kind of truncated. Well, she, my sister. That can happen. So, what it is slightly mediated by non-native acquisition by Africans. There are one or two aspects of the sound system that can be treated as that same thing. So, Black English is, for one thing, it's not just the slang. Another thing that it's not is an African language. I don't think that it began as a Creole language. It's just a non-standard but not substandard dialect of English. To the extent that it seems at all exotic compared to even a North Country British dialect, that's because it shows slight signs of the fact that the people who created it were people who were past their critical acquisition phase and were no longer capable of learning a language perfectly upon hearing it for just a little while. And so every now and then some corners are shaved off. Not enough to render it anything like a Creole, though, and even though some corners have been shaved off, it's, to make a really sloppy analogy, grown some new corners. And so, for example, the use of habitual be, there are other complications that have happened. So, As a result, Black English can be described as a semi-creole of regional English dialects of the United Kingdom. And it stands in the same relationship to Standard English as Standard English stands to Old English. Because as we've seen, Standard English is a little more shaved down than it should be. Where are hithers and thithers and whithers? Well, Black English takes that a slight step further. But basically, Black English is English.